Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
By the Gab Radio Network.
I admit it. I confess, I like Celine Dion. Welcome back, 23 after the hour. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. The one for my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Alex Pollock's our guest, our new friend, soon to be not new friend. We'll get him back again. Distinguished senior fellow with the R Street Institute, formerly with AEI, formerly with the Federal Home Bank Loan, Home Loan Bank of Chicago, et cetera, many credentials, author of Boom and Bust, Financial Cycles and Human Prosperity. Good news, he's got another book coming out, folks, so we're looking forward to that. Alex, thanks again for being here. We're talking about what caused the collapse of 2008, which we pretty much got into in the last segment. We pretty much wrapped that up. Alex, I just want to remind people, folks, the thing that caused the collapse of 2008 was not something that happened in 2008. The seeds were sown 10 years earlier, and even though the excesses, Alex, even though the excesses were market excesses, the lever that allowed the excess came from government. Would that be accurate?
I think that's right.
So have we learned anything? Going forward, as we move forward, help us out, make us feel better. Have we learned anything? Are we back on track for another collapse?
Somebody said to me one time, will we learn the lessons of this crisis? And I say, yes, we learn the lesson of every crisis. Problem is we forget them after about 5 or 10 years.
Right.
And we have to keep thinking about the history and the long history and trying to get these lessons in our minds. But as time goes on, being humans, the memories, no matter how bad the experiences were, fade. And, of course, new people come along.
Right.
Who didn't live through the problems, so it's hard to avoid doing it again.
Here's why your point is so accurate. The only difference between the stock market crash of March of 2000 and the collapse, the financial collapse of 2008, is the difference in the products that we used.
Yes.
I mean a bad tranche of mortgages is no different from a website that went public that doesn't even exist.
It's very interesting to compare the collapse of the tech stock bubble, which ran for the better part of a decade and then, as you say, fell apart in 2000 with the housing collapse. An intriguing fact about those two is the size of the loss of market value in the aggregate from the bubble prices to the bottom after the crash is about the same. It's about $6 or $7 trillion of money people thought they had that they found out really wasn't there.
It was always monopoly money.
It never really was there, but they thought it was there.
The only thing about it is some part of 2008 was caused by overreacting, I think, Alex, because there were people writing down mortgages when the tenant was still making the rent payment. The property never had gone into any kind of distress. Some of the things that happened in 2008 we caused ourselves by the way we tried to recover. It was worse than it had to be, I think. But I want to come back
to that the theory of marking to market when you get into a crisis and there is no market and then you're trying to write things down to distress prices, which is exactly what you're saying.
Mark to market did not have to happen.
And it was, in retrospect, was a dumb idea, but it was an idea embraced by all kinds of so-called experts.
I was reporting on it in those days. I was talking bad about mark to market because I could tell. I mean, I had people on here saying my properties aren't in distress. My tenants are making payments. Why are you making me write these down, bankers?
Yeah.
So I want to come back to my question. This whole conversation is for naught if we can't get some kind of a perspective on where we are now and where we're going. What do you think?
Well, of course, we want to know where we are and how to avoid problems in the future, and try to draw and remember. That's the tough part.
Yep.
The lessons, and there are a lot of lessons. One of them you said before, which is if you reduce credit standards and make risky loans
right.
in a big way, it will always come back to bite you. You'll always regret it. The music will stop and the game will be over. And the other is if you put into a market you use the term the moral hazard, that is to say making people do risky things, of government guarantees of credit, that leads to problems. You know, and the one we haven't mentioned where that same hazard is going on right now is the explosion in student loans.
That's right. And also, there's some auto loan stuff out there. But let me ask you a question.
That, yeah.
Is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going to have to be bailed out again?
Well, they're on a constant bailout. They're running completely on the guarantee of the government. Because of the way that their bailout was set up, they have within rounding error, zero capital. So when you're running on zero capital, you have no credit of your own.
Is this adding to the contingent liability? Is this adding to the contingent liability of the fiscal condition of the country?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In a big way.
It's another add-on to Medicare and all the other commitments we've made, right?
That's right. And then these numbers, they keep – we talked about before whether the government's guarantee of Fannie and Freddie was
right.
explicit or implicit,
right.
or as I say, implicit but real.
Alex, I've got to wrap it up.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.